Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 302.
This week on the podcast, the election results were great, so don't let MSNBC tell you otherwise.
And one more item's been ticked off the old dictator checklist. Freedom of the press is gone.
Plus, Jeff Sessions is unbelievably not the most evil attorney general we'll have to have this year.
And California is once again a blockbuster movie about the end times.
Plus, don't let the former senator from Missouri tell you who should be our next presidential candidate.
And friend of the podcast, Grant Sloss, is here to talk election results.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com. Welcome back to the podcast, Grant Sloss.
Yeah.
Awkward hello to both of you. Everyone listening. Yes. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad we primed you for the awkward hello so that you can announce it.
Yeah.
That's always helpful. But we brought Grant back on because we wanted to discuss election results with our whole election crew.
That's right.
I'm the Jessica Yellen hologram of Brain Trust Live.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up, yeah. I think. Mm-hmm. But so we had an exciting election night of, most importantly, me being incredibly correct about one important
thing. That's the most important takeaway.
And that's what we should take away from this.
Well, we said before, on last week's podcast, right? We were like, we're going to have to do the podcast after the election to reroute you into thinking that it was better than you were probably told on the actual night. And that's exactly what we're about to do.
Literally, as the results are evolving, Brent is texting me like, I don't know, I'm not feeling good. Because there was a moment on MSNBC where
the people on MSNBC were trying to not just openly weep all night. I mean, James Carville, you would have thought that, like, everyone that he knew had just passed. I mean,
what was he so upset about? Just that we didn't win 50 seats in the House?
Yeah, literally. Because you weren't the only, like, my dad called and was just like, it's over. Like, in a very, he was just like resigned. And I was like, I don't think it's over.
I think the problem was that everybody was immediately feeling like Florida didn't perform like the polls. And then I think everybody immediately was just then sort of like grasping at everything bad that was happening.
Okay. Well, first of all, Florida was performing exactly like the polls in that the polls had them in a statistical tie, and they are in a statistical and literal tie.
Yeah, Florida was performing exactly like Florida, which is just batshit crazy for as long as they can.
They're never going to do the thing that you think they're going to do. And the second thing was that Kentucky 6, which was the sort of first...
That was the first of the, like, maybe Democrats can pick this up. But that was, like, some rural district that Trump won by, like, 12 points or something like that.
They shouldn't have even been on the list anyway.
But everybody was hyper-focused.
They flipped 14 points, and everyone lost their shit. Completely.
Right, because they didn't flip it.
Yeah. Right, yeah. But it was close all night in a district that had been a serious Trump district and also had no urban people nearby to come canvass for them. All of the other districts that we were looking at as flips were like suburban districts where people from the city next door could come
where
and
there were educated
bother
people.
Come and explain people. Like,
exactly. But so for 1 hour, everyone was despondent.
Right.
I, in that 1 hour, had a huge victory, and so I felt great.
And it never really turned around.
No.
That night, anyway. I mean, people, I think, were sort of like, all right, well, we flipped the House, so, like, everybody was sort of like, okay, I can go on with my life again. There's some checks and balances.
Yes.
But, like, we never really sort of, like, had the celebratory moment that I feel like if we would have waited to report any of the results until right this moment, then that we could have had, we could all be toasting right now.
Right. I can do part of that to like 2016 PTSD when everybody thought everything 100%. Was going to be fine and nothing was fine.
Oh, yeah.
So I understand. I hate it,
well,
but
I was having that PTSD all day and the day before, too, because I was feeling okay, like, leading all the way up to it. And then, like, on the day, I, like, didn't sleep very well the night before.
I know, me
either. Just because it was like,
it was too exciting,
you know,
but terrifying.
I was like, I felt like it was going to be an okay night, and then I was sort of like, I was like, wait a minute, I felt like this before.
I've had
this exact feeling once.
Yeah. Well, also, I think there was some other difference that I picked up on this time that I think was the same in 2016 to some degree, but bigger this time around because we were following smaller races, which is that the Western states vote differently than the Eastern states, and because of that, counting votes in the Western states takes forever. And most of the seats we were looking to pick up, we had to wait till we got to Texas and beyond to get to. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the states where we're having really exciting potential victories now, we were like, well, we've lost everything, because when, like you said, you know, that Mimi Walters-Katie Porter race, when the results first came in, Mimi Walters was ahead by 1 gazillion points, and we all went to bed thinking, well, Katie Porter's not going to win that race. Good night. And then it's like now it looks like all of those seats are actually still in play.
Right, in California. Yeah. Because you just have to have people... A lot of people do mail-in ballots here, and as long as they were postmarked by Tuesday.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, so some of them hadn't even arrived until Friday.
Right, let alone counted.
And you guys know what big procrastinators Democrats are.
Yeah. Yeah. The late mail-in ballots have historically been like...
Overwhelmingly
Democratic
that's
ballots.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Well, think about it, because Republicans are not get-out-the-vote benefiters. So they go in, they're prepared, they're old. They have a plan. They go vote like responsible people.
Well, they're not aware of other ways to vote.
No, exactly. Democrats,
they're analog voters.
They're analog voters. Californians are, meanwhile, mostly voting by mail. And in Oregon and Washington, I think they're entirely voting by mail. Or at least in Oregon, they are. I mean, in Washington,
and in Arizona, they're still counting votes there. Too.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
But they keep updating it like every day. They do like these huge
Even people that I knew drops. Had been planning to vote for weeks and had been bothering me for our voter guide for weeks didn't actually fill in their ballot until election day. I was like doing an emergency sweep of my friends to be like, can you guys make sure that you get these to a polling place, please? Does someone need me to pick up their ballots? Like, who needs me to come to them and make sure they vote?
Yeah, mail canvassing is going to be the next thing in 2020.
Oh, absolutely. I was pioneering it this year, and it was a very effective strategy.
I was beta testing that.
But let's dive into the most important states, those being states we're either from or live in.
Yes.
Right.
Forget the rest of the state.
Right. We'll get to them in a second.
Leading with New York, because New York was one of the most victorious of the victories that we had on Tuesday night. Not only because there everyone has to vote on election day and there's really no option. So like we really had some news, some hard news the next day. But we picked up one like true surprise congressional seat there in Staten Island. Max Rose, that seat for CD 11 was not a seat it was sort of like in play, but we really weren't expecting to win that.
No.
Antonio Delgado won his race. We were very proud of him for that and very excited because now my parents don't live in a Republican district, and that makes everyone happy.
Yeah.
The state Senate went deep blue, which means that the Democrats now control all three chambers, and even though Cuomo is basically a check on himself because he doesn't like to do anything would be too progressive.
Is Cuomo going to have to ask some of those Democrats to switch parties?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure but he's not going to have as easy a time doing it because so many of those wins were in districts where we beat IDC people. And those constituents are pissed. So they're like not prepared. They're not about to have their rep switch on them again. But it also meant that de Blasio has been walking around being like, what is he saying? We can't do single payer. Of course we can have Medicare for all. That's ridiculous. They promised Medicare for all. They can have it. So like de Blasio has been really empowered, which I'm very into because de Blasio is obviously less of a villain than Cuomo in the scale of villainous New York characters. I mean, I don't think de Blasio is a villain in that story, but even people who hate de Blasio hate Cuomo more.
More.
So, you know, I'm excited just to have a thing that he can be bragging about and whatnot. But that was a place where we really saw, like, it's a blue state in presidential years, but certainly upstate New York has much more in common with the Rust Belt and with rural parts of America than it does with New York City.
Right.
And they have a real chip on their shoulder about hating the city because they really are overshadowed by...
That not would sure. suck,
really
though,
the largest
the entire country sort of has a chip on its shoulder about New York City, because New York City is
And they're, like,
with
on a state level, too. They have to deal with that bullshit.
Yeah.
The secret is that the whole state's gerrymandered so that they get way more representation than New York City. So New York City also hates them. It's a mutual feeling.
Well, that's nice. That's going to end
Everyone has a stake in the hatred.
Well, but speaking of gerrymandering, though, I mean, we may as well throw that out, too, because that was one of the other big things on election night.
Yes.
A lot of states voted to ungerrymander themselves or to have it redone by an independent
and it was an independent commission in Colorado and where was it Michigan I think it Missouri passed the most interesting and most stringent laws where they are going to have they have like specific rules like criteria that the new districts have to meet in addition to having a sort of bipartisan or nonpartisan gerrymandering avoidance commission, if you will. That would be a redistricting commission. But they actually created like criteria to make sure that their districts don't get gerrymandered.
Don't become
again.
That episode of Friday Night Lights when they were carving up Dylan and Estill and exactly. Yeah, good football players.
Exactly.
That's for all the 10 people who watched that in 2007. That's for you.
That's right. But we also, I think, are going to see some movement in North Carolina where they were allowed to keep those districts, but as expected, 50% of North Carolinians voted for Democrats, and they got 3 out of 13 congressional seats.
Yeah.
So that did some clear math for everyone.
Well, and we saw that in Pennsylvania this year because this was the first time that they voted with their like court ordered
their new
map. Districts.
Yeah.
And it changed everything. Pennsylvania, way less disappointing than Florida in an unusual turn of events.
Yeah.
And Maryland also voted to allow same day registration in the future. So good work to them as well.
Yeah.
Now we can talk about Iowa, where there were also exciting results.
There we go.
And it's been tough, you guys, because Iowa has been disappointing for a while.
It was partly disappointed, but it did better.
Scale of trends, it did really well, because even the loss was a win in the sense that there was a true challenge to an idiot.
Yeah, yes. they flipped 2 congressional districts, so they because they already had 1, so now they have 3 out of 4. There's only 4. Steve King is the 4th, and he managed to win, which is upsetting.
Still somehow is clinging.
But he's from a district that is like 100% Republican, and 99% of those Republicans are okay that he's basically, like retweeting KKK members,
right? I mean, and appearing in white nationalist journals in Austria. That's like
the fact that that was even close
is shocking. You know, almost 99% of his district is like homeschooled Quakers. Like it's that sort of like end times people.
And it's
that
like the
homeschooled evangelicals, not Quakers.
And
Quakers would
evangelicals, yes. Sorry.
And it's the most like rural of the rural too. Like when you look at the Iowa congressional maps, there's like 3 that are all sort of like from Des Moines eastward, and Des Moines is in the central part of the state, and then the entire western half of the state is Steve King's.
It's 30 people.
Yeah. Right.
And
there's no humans there.
I had accidentally made a joke at the election watch party I was at. There were no Iowans there, and I made a joke about how that district is mostly pigs. And they were how dare you? And I was like, it's literal pigs, you guys, not the people.
Oh, there's way more pigs there than people.
No, if you could run those numbers, you would be proven right.
No, I was I mean actual, like, hogs, like pig, like farm animal pigs.
Oh, they thought you were.
And they thought I was calling the people pigs.
Okay.
Oh. But the other thing that we learned from that, actually, because that race was also interesting because the J.D. Scholten ran a progressive, like a fairly progressive campaign with, you know, he talked about healthcare, he talked about immigration, even though advisors told him not to do that, and he still put up like a real challenge. And every other Democrat they've run against Steve King has not.
They always try and find the most boring one, and I would contend that that's actually what happened in the governor's race probably too there, because Kim Reynolds won, but she barely won, but she was running against Fred Hubble, and if you're from Iowa, you've heard the Hubble name because they're the richest family in the state.
Yeah, right.
And so like, they just ran like the most boring, like rich centrist Democrat,
and if there's Democrats are corrupt too.
If there's one thing that you can sell to, you know, a bunch of rural people, it's Medicare
it's
for all.
Whiplash, it's doesn't very, have your you know, best interest
right, exactly. So I don't know. I think that they probably could have won that governor's race with a better candidate too.
Yeah.
Although he just tried to buy it for himself, which sometimes works also.
Sometimes it works,
but it didn't in this case.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about California before we move on to all of the other states, because that's where we all live now.
Yeah.
Right. And California also, as we know, the results are still coming in, so we don't even have hard and fast results. I have one bone to pick with California,
please.
Which is like, what were you doing on those props? We voted to keep the gas tax, which was great. Good work, us. We saw through a Republican strategy to ruin us. But then we voted down rent control.
Yeah.
I want
by a lot.
Who in the state does not benefit from rent control ultimately? I would like a personal phone call from those people. Who are these people? Why
homeowners
do people and it's
or something. Part,
it's you know, it was one of those things where like $75 million got spent in the opposition and like $25 million got spent by the proponents. So like it was the opposition heavily outspent everyone. I was getting mailers every day about it. In this neighborhood where I was like, everyone's a renter in this neighborhood, you guys, cool it. I don't care if the home prices are going down. But there was that, and then the dialysis one. I get that one was misunderstood, and the opposition
and
to that spent $110 million advertising against it, like an amount that like boggles the mind.
It was the most money spent on a proposition ever. And it was on the dialysis one.
Yes.
And it's just
and it was spent by two companies.
Well, because there's two companies that control the dialysis monopoly.
Market. Right.
Because it's a that was a corporate profit proposition is what
it was about
was,
price
basically.
Controls for healthcare procedures, which we are for that, you guys. Yes. As people. We're for it. Don't think we're not for it.
We're not here to make dialysis companies richer.
No. And whatever those ads were telling you about how those dialysis patients were being used for in the name of corporate profits.
Yes.
So next time, read our prop. It's like, I mean, read our guide. It's like you didn't even try. In any case. But other than that, did great.
I do have to say, like, 8 of the 10 props left my mind as soon as I turned in my ballot. You know, like, I read and did all the research and read your voter guide and read other voter guides. Then as soon as it's in, I was like, wait, what was four?
Oh, I know. There's so many people were just like, what?
Yeah, no one knew.
People would do that too, where like they would be confused on a specific thing and they would like, ask me what I voted
right.
on
what
seven
do you think
or whatever.
On seven?
I'm like,
I don't know.
I have to give me 30 seconds and I'll tell you what I did.
Give me the full text of the bill. I still won't remember.
I got asked so many questions about the props this year that I ended up memorizing them, which I've never done before. And I was like, this is problematic.
It is.
I shouldn't. Literally, strangers wrote me emails asking me questions that had gotten the prop guide forwarded to them from other people, were asking me questions about the props.
How do you monetize that?
I mean, I've been trying to figure that out all week. Because
if you have any ideas, at Brain Trust Live.
Exactly. But I mean, it was like to the extent that people who don't know me and have no reason to try, like Lyft drivers started asking me about prop.
Oh, that's right.
I had a whole conversation about Prop 10 and Prop 8 with my Lyft driver on the way to my election viewing party. Sent her the voter guide, and then she was like, great, I'm going to send it to all my nurse friends. So a bunch of nurses in Riverside were also using our prop guide because I had gotten one of them as a Lyft driver. But like, it was like people are so desperate for information on those because they're so confusing that they will literally take any guide that you give them.
I know.
So, wow.
Which is a problem because I saw some that
were
I
wrong.
Thought were garbage.
Yeah,
but,
so true. Anyway. But in any case, we have Katie Hill won her race. Harley Ruta beat Dana Rohrabacher, so he's gone. Russia's favorite congressman is
that
gone.
That hasn't been. I think of the ones that we're going to tell you about right now, I think the only one that has been called is that Katie Hill race.
Yes, officially.
Steve Knight actually conceded.
Yes.
All of these other ones are still counting votes, but like we said, if history is to be...
These people have now pulled ahead.
...is repeating itself here. Right.
Right. So, like, a Democrat pulled ahead late.
Or are close enough that they still could or probably will.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's looking like Katie Porter might end up winning that race after all, after being down 6 billion points.
Yeah, that's one of the ones on the night. Orange County that has been Republican for a million
all
years.
The time.
But Clinton won, I think, narrowly. So they were trying to flip, and it's
there's
close.
Also... Daryl Issa might lose his seat too.
Oh well, he's retired.
I mean, they might
seat.
Lose that
but
seat.
But he's not going to hand the baton to some
another
asshole.
Right? Yeah. Because exactly. That was one of the seats that I didn't even expect us to win because the polling on that was so kind of like bizarre.
Yeah. And
because well, it's an open seat first of all, and congressional seats are hard to poll anyway. But I don't know. In my mind, like Daryl Issa's district is like. Has been putting up with an open idiot so long that I was like, there's no world in which this is an open... It's not like Katie Hill where I was like, nah, that could go. But like...
But if they've been electing that asshole for that long, it stands to reason they'll just pick another asshole.
Right. Like, I was just sort of like, that seat stays in Republican hands in my mind. Like, so I was excited when it started to look like Mike Levin might win that seat. And even I was shocked to hear that Gil Cisneros might still be in the play.
Yeah, that still is undecided.
I mean,
I told you guys, I got an email from his campaign an hour before I got here saying we're still in it. So sure, why not?
Yeah, I mean, he's not my favorite of the Democrats.
No,
but
he's the lottery winner. Isn't
he's
he?
The lottery winner,
winning,
yeah.
Like ex-Marine or something.
Yeah, and then also like, Josh Harder is still in play too.
Yeah.
So that's basically all the seats, you guys, that
we were up for.
We
were thinking that there were like seven, I think, in California.
Yeah,
right.
There they are.
That's the seven. So in any case, it's looking pretty good in California. It's looking exciting. The state that got everyone's panties in a twist was Florida.
Yeah.
And that was because, A, their polls closed fairly early, in the night.
Right. It was the first thing that we could focus on.
It was the first thing we could focus on. It's the state that everyone already focuses on anyway because they have a history of ridiculous
I'm just gonna move like the next prop on the next in 2020 is that Florida has its election a week before everybody else, just so they figure their shit out before election night. Because I can't take this.
No, it's so stressful. No one ever wanted to have to say Florida recount ever again, and yet here we are. We have two of them going on. Ugh. But here's the good
Andrew,
news:
Andrew Gillum unconceded the other day.
Yeah. Like emphatically.
No, I mean it's. The Gillum unconcession was the greatest use of Twitter, I think, that you could imagine in the Trump era. Bill Nelson, I'm mad that that race is closer than the Gillum race because screw Bill Nelson. He's like the Dianne Feinstein of fucking Florida. Don't run again. He's 100 years old. He has no qualities. Aside from being an astronaut once. Yeah, he was an astronaut.
Wow, why isn't he beating me over the head with that
one? I mean, like, literally, there's only one interesting fact about him, and it's that he was an astronaut, but he's, like, otherwise the most middle-of-the-road non-entity of a person, and he's 100,000 years old.
Yeah,
he's and, like, really old. Nice enough guy, but, like, and running, bring someone in.
Yeah.
Get
yeah. somebody who can beat Voldemort out of there.
Exactly.
Like, come on.
Yeah. Like, and he's running against someone who has recently won statewide office in a repeated, you know, pattern. Like, it just didn't make sense. To let him be the guy who was the guy. It just, in any case, that one pissed me off, but that is also headed to a recount, so we'll see what happens. Now, that one might have to be a hand recount because it's that close.
Well, and also they are, like, you know, this one of the rare times that I agree with Republicans here on this one, they are all really crying foul about Brenda Snipes down in Broward County. And I'm like, you know what? They're right.
Sure, sure.
She's terrible, and she has screwed up more elections than... I mean, we know for a fact that she literally destroyed ballots in 2016
right.
that she just didn't like much.
Wow.
And what's his name who ran it? Because that's Debbie Wasserman Schultz's district.
Of course.
Tim Canova has been begging and pleading with Rick Scott to fire her because he can't. I mean, that's not she's not an elected person.
Right. She's just
and so to some degree, if he ends up losing because Brenda Snipes just sort of finds fake votes for Bill Nelson, then... That's on Rick Scott at that point.
Because, I mean, he knew what he knew.
Can I drag Marco Rubio for a minute?
Obviously.
Yeah. Okay. So this recount is terrible, but what it has done is proven how like cynical and awful Republicans are in that Rubio is tweeting that the simple counting of all the votes is somehow fraud. And he's saying,
exactly.
This is an injustice. And it's like, no, they're just counting everything. And Trump
That's literally the only way this works.
Trump weighs in all caps saying stolen election. And
there's a state law that says that if it's within a certain amount, then it goes to an automatic machine recount. And that's what we're doing right now.
Right.
So,
That's first of all, their law. It's not our fault that
they
have a law.
No one imposed that on them.
They passed that law themselves. Second of all, they have a history of very close elections requiring a recount because also they seem to be unable to keep track of all the votes that people cast in Florida.
The law they made didn't come from nowhere.
Right, they have a history of having problems finding votes that were cast.
I know that we are obviously past the hanging Chad days because they don't have those anymore, but I feel like I read something the other day that they were having like issues with their felt markers.
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh,
Well, we're going to have to get like Hobby Lobby to sponsor this election in Florida just so that they're... Arts and crafts are together.
Well, the biggest win of the night, I think, also came from Florida, though. Because the one thing that I was looking for in that first swath of elections, and the reason that I didn't fall down the rabbit hole of MSNBC's depression, was because Amendment 4 passed.
Yeah.
And it passed pretty impressively. It passed with, like, you know, it passed by 5 points at least. That's the proposition that will extend voting rights to ex-felons in Florida. That's 10% of their population.
Wow.
That's disproportionately affecting, obviously, people of color, as you might imagine anything that involves incarceration would. That, I think, to me, is just as I saw the almost Beto O'Rourke win in Texas as a sign that Texas is purple. Like, Texas will be purple. There is now, like, there's now an unquestionable sort of move towards purple.
Yeah.
I feel like Florida's going to be blue, and it's because of Amendment 4, and it's going to take a while for all of these, you know, for all of these things to sort of catch up with the system, because now we've got to register these voters, now we have to make sure they know that they are allowed to vote. You know, there's a lot of things you need to do once you have given the right to vote back to people who had been disenfranchised, but this is, like, such a huge victory for the forces against voter suppression that I feel like, to me, that was the only thing I cared about in the Florida election, truly, that, you know, I felt like was long game-wise the only game in town.
Big deal.
And it passed easily without any question.
They're not still counting that vote.
They're not still counting that vote. They don't have to. The Koch brothers also were behind it. Like, for some reason, it was like everyone got behind this because. And I don't know why the Koch brothers were sponsoring this, by the way. But it was a Democrat.
Turns out every once in a while when there's a good idea, everybody can just acknowledge that it's a good idea.
People will stumble into a good idea.
But what's confusing about it is 15% of voters in Florida went to the polls, voted to give the right to vote back to ex-felons, a move that they know, A, disproportionately benefits Democrats, and B, is a thing that is against the Republican stance of hating anyone who votes.
Who votes.
And then cast a vote for DeSantis.
A Republican.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
And Rick Scott.
Yeah.
15% of voters in Florida did this, you guys. It wasn't just like a few people.
Yeah.
It's millions of people basically made this choice.
Well, the other thing that was like, at least in the statewide, in the governor's race and the Senate race, that was a little upsetting was that they both, well, we don't know who won,
right.
I guess.
No.
Yet. Okay. But it was close, and the two Republicans ran in different ways. DeSantis really, like, was happy to tell everyone that he was best friends with Donald Trump.
Right.
And Rick Scott tried to portray himself as, like, didn't really have anything to do with him and was sort of just like, I'm the governor and I just sort of, like, know how to run things.
Right.
And, like, both of them did pretty well. So it seemed like there are two ways to win in Florida if you're a Republican.
Anyway.
And that's upsetting
so
because
true.
It looked like there were potentially zero ways to win as a Democrat. Though.
Well,
so
I would say,
that was, I think, what my sort of, I was like, because I thought one, they might split, and I suppose they still could at this point. But I was sort of like, I was hoping that it would be DeSantis who would lose because he was the one who sort of like saddled up to Trump, and he's the one who looks like maybe he's a little bit better off, and that was upsetting.
I literally had a glass half full version of that.
That's so weird.
Story.
That's not who you
because
are.
Because this last 2 years has been outrageous.
It really
has. First, because I've spent all of this time trying to explain election results to people who only recently started following election results and been like, no, being progressive is this. Usually you get 5% of the vote. We have 30% of the vote right now. Pay attention, you guys. Like, we're doing okay. You know, like, that's been my whole of the last, you know, the primary process. The whole of my last 2 years has been saying that to people. And so I noted, because on the Democratic side, they also ran on two different strategies. Bill Nelson ran on the New Democrats moderate, you know, I'm just a guy who's
aging
a moderate
astronaut.
Guy, an aging
right.
astronaut strategy.
Right.
And Gillum tried to run on a progressive platform.
That's true.
And they also basically tied. With, I mean,
that's
it
true.
Turns out there's no way to win in Florida.
Right, because no one has.
No one has won.
What would be great is if this recount goes on for so long that all those re-enfranchised people
just
get to cast votes.
Yes. Right, uh-huh. Well, I feel like they should just let them vote at this.
I agree.
Like, it's tied. We need some help deciding.
Exactly.
So let's take it to the felons.
That's right.
The non-murdering, non-sex criminal.
The felon runoff.
There are restrictions on
right.
it. It's not just everybody.
Right, yes.
Right.
But moving on to Georgia, that's another race that hasn't been called, so we can't tell you what happened in the gubernatorial race. It's not as promising as it might be in Florida in the sense that it's not as close.
Well, but it might go to a runoff.
But it might go to it's the one that might go to a runoff, exactly.
Right. And the margin there is certainly within the amount of people who may have been removed from the voter rolls
correct.
By the person running in the race for governor. So
one thing
that
we can all agree on about the Georgia governor's race is that it was stolen.
There's your stolen race.
It's a stolen race. So if Kemp wins, he did not win legitimately, and we all know it. Everyone knows. I don't know what we do with that information. Like, Trump didn't win legitimately, and he's just like the president now. But like, I feel like it is powerful to know that even if you live in a state where you're, because I think a lot of people are like really grappling with how we can live in a country with so many people that are voting on such like contrary values to our own. You know, like I certainly grapple with that quite a bit. And I think I'm sure that would be especially difficult if you lived in a southern state where those values have been louder for longer, if you will. But I feel like we can rest assured that more people went to the polls to vote for Stacey Abrams and just didn't get or attempted to go to the polls or would have liked
would
to go
have.
To the polls
right.
or whatever, we can rest assured that more people wanted her to be the governor.
Yes, right.
And
she's
we can
the
rest
actual people.
I mean,
right.
they were working even like election night. They were getting court orders to extend
right,
voting
because they
hours.
Well, it's because they had
issues, like, at every polling
place.
Didn't
they have, like, thousands of voting machines, like, locked in a warehouse?
Yes.
Yep.
Didn't they find those?
Sure did.
Yeah.
You know where else?
Brian Kemp, the man who could have released
those.
Is
Shonda Rhimes producing the Georgia gubernatorial election? And can she please bring it to an end?
Stop
already.
Yeah.
I know. It's been nonstop drama. But Lucy McBath won her seat.
Yeah, they called that, like,
that was a late call
later. Yeah, and that was the one, again, like, having a stance on something turns out a thing people like.
People
because
like.
Yeah. that was the same. She beat Karen Handel, who John Ossoff could not beat, and we sent, you know, tens of millions of dollars to John Ossoff down there.
Right.
To that Star Wars cosplayer, and that was worth nothing.
And did he have a stance on anything?
Nope.
I can't think of. At least Lucy McBath was like, I have a stance on guns.
Right. Yeah. And everyone was like, well, that seems fair. Your son was murdered.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's...
She's the person who... She never run for anything before.
But that's who wins. Like, that's what we progressives got out of this election was our big victories of the night came from people who actually ran on something.
A lot of them, for
you know,
sure.
And certainly in places where we got unexpected victories.
Yes.
You know, there were places that have always been swing districts where they've always been close. And, like, you know, I would say that about my parents' district. Like, that is a swing district, even though it
Some
had been a Republican
richer
district.
Some of the suburban places.
You
like,
could still run on a nonsense platform,
correct.
And it was just, like, there was enough excitement from the city next door to, like, knock on your door 20 times so that you could, you know, remember to vote. But a lot of these surprise wins came in places, and even surprise close races, like, you know, Steve King's race, for example, came in places where people were running on things they're not supposed to be able to run on in those places, and were winning or nearly winning in places that you don't expect to win on issues, except that it turns out everyone has health, so everyone needs health care.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In a rural district especially, immigration is actually an important issue because that's where the labor to farm comes from.
Right.
You know, like, there are things that it turns out actually do matter to people when you can give them a candidate that will actually, like, tell them those things.
Right.
Yeah. And this was, I think, one of those.
I also think we'd be remiss not to point out that it was a lot of pissed off women who'd had enough that were giving us the first
sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh,
well,
yeah. Big night for women.
Yeah, for sure.
We're really killing it this year, you guys. After
something like 100,
over 103, I think 113 maybe total to Congress.
Amazing.
I don't know if that includes the races that haven't been called but, like, look like they're being called.
Okay.
But at least 103 women going to Congress, and many of them, like 30 or 40 of them, are new.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
two of them Muslim.
Yeah.
Too.
And
Mike
first
Pence
Native American,
have to
first Native American women.
Yeah.
Like, I know. I'm so excited for that.
Oh, yeah, that's
it's going to have some great photos of him like having his face and them having their faces.
I want them to lean into it. To whatever they're wearing. I don't care what it is, but like it better be a clear signifier to my friends who is coming to town.
Yes. No, that's going to be that's going to be it.
Yeah.
And then in Texas was the other thing that everyone was like, "Oh, we lost everything and now we're going to die because Beto didn't win." Here's what I want to say about that, too. He was polling behind. He outperformed the polling in that race by a lot. He didn't win, but he almost won, which in Texas is pretty good. And he carried, like, four different congressional seats over
the
line.
That's the thing. I was actually talking to, you know, my coworker who's a Republican, and he was like, he goes, "You're going to wake up on Wednesday morning, and you're going to feel bad that you spent $35 million in that Senate race because he's going to lose by 10 points. He won, lost by...
Two and a half
or 3 points, and also they flipped two districts. They held some that they needed to hold, but like two suburban districts that were clearly driven by turnout in that Senate race.
This is why the 50-state strategy matters and why running someone in every election matters, because you don't know what the ancillary benefits of running people in these races is going to be. Like, at every level, running people at a local level matters to national candidates and vice versa.
Well, we're
going
to get to some stats pretty soon on the local level because we killed it on that front. On Tuesday.
But that, you know, it's not a loss to have someone like Beto O'Rourke lose if it means that we bring new voters into the system, that new seats become in play because of the excitement around his candidacy, and that, you know, because of that, we get long-term gains out of it. It is worth the $35 million for that alone.
Right, definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, and also I think you mentioned it being purple, and it certainly seems to be moving that way. And that was another big thing, I think, from the night, is that Democrats have, for many election cycles, and not just in regards to Texas, but just sort of like about the Southwest in general, about how the Southwest could potentially be sort of like the new firewall. I hate saying that stupid word. But, you know,
there's so many dumb words.
And then elections roll around, and then that never really materializes into anything.
Right.
But Nevada looks like it's leaning, you know, Hillary won that. Jackie Rosen won.
By a huge margin, too.
Was not even close.
Dirty Dean Heller is gone.
Dean Heller is gone. Texas was very close. It looks for all the world that Kyrsten Sinema is going to win in Arizona.
Yep.
They haven't won anything statewide in Arizona in a long time. Colorado's electing gay people governors. Statewide.
Right. Yep.
So that Tuesday was the first night where that felt like it might be something that was other than our hopes and dreams and imaginations.
Well, and this is around the time they said it would happen, because they said, you know, it was always about 2024. It was, you know, those estimates were always about when younger voters started to outnumber older voters. This is what would happen in the Southwest. And that is what is starting to happen.
Yeah.
And it should happen, because these are states with large Latino populations. Right. These are states with some, I mean, you know, in Arizona, we have a large old person population, so that's a problem. But Texas has young people in it.
They'll die.
Colorado has young people in it. Like, these are states, and, you know, New Mexico for years has been purple, so that isn't a surprise that that isn't a surprise that New Mexico also has the ability to elect Democrats. But, like, this is the time it was supposed to happen, and it's happening, like they said it would. Yeah. And that is because you can read demographic trends pretty accurately a lot of the time.
It turns out.
When you have access to numbers and science.
Yeah.
But yeah, that and that's...
But that's huge.
It's huge if Arizona does go blue, I mean, does elect Sinema to Senate, because they have another seat coming up in 2 years, and that's going to be in a presidential year, and John Kyle is a person who... I think he'll probably retire,
It would be great if we can win, if somehow Bill Nelson wins and also they call this for Sinema, because we might get to a point where we only lost one or two net Senate races. And then in 2020, it's the Republicans who really have to defend more of them. There's, where do we have? I can't remember. Colorado has one coming up. The other Arizona seat, Maine, has one, and they elected a bunch of Democrats on Tuesday. Iowa, also Joni Ernst's seat is coming up.
Thank God.
And that could, enough I think, her. Like seeing what we saw on Tuesday could be close if there's, especially in a presidential year, and we have a decent candidate running against her.
Get the bread bags ready for your shoes, Joni. It's a long walk home.
Exactly. North Carolina has one coming up. So as close as we can keep this Senate now in 2020, you might be able to get it back.
Well, and I would say also with Maine, because they have a different voting system now, I think they're much more likely to elect a Democratic candidate for Senate.
Yeah.
In part just because the system.
Well, and whoever that candidate is already has millions and millions of dollars to work with, because we gave it to her after the Kavanaugh hearings.
We promised Susan Collins we'd take her job.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to. She's going to be pretty easy to run against. I actually don't think she will run.
I don't think she's going to run.
Yeah. Oh, really? You think she'll drop out?
Well,
she's been talking about running for governor.
Yeah,
but I just feel
she's
like
not
she's
going
gotta,
to do that
I
now because that was
got
last
a problem
time.
Statewide
she's yeah, I think she's now. Going. There's too much focus on that race. She is the enemy in state politics right now, and they're sort of trending blue right now. Maine has democratically controlled state legislature at every level now.
Oh.
Maine, the state of Maine.
Yeah,
that state. Paul LePage's state has now elected Democrats to control every chamber of their state government.
Yeah.
So, welcome Maine into the fold. Reason.
But speaking of state houses, we picked up a couple hundred seats in state legislatures.
We flipped a bunch of state legislature bodies as well.
Or took them out of full Republican control. Right.
Yeah. Like individual bodies and also full state governments were flipped. And it didn't work in the other direction the same way.
Yeah. So where we are now, without knowing exactly what some of the results are going to be, we've got 31 pickups, and it looks like it might be as many as 40, which is what people thought the high end was.
Exactly.
So,
wave, you guys.
That's
then we did.
That's a wave.
That's a wave. Yeah. That's the most for Democrats since the post-Watergate election.
Yeah. Well, that feels appropriate.
It feels... I feel like the producers of Slow Burn will love to hear that statistic.
That's right.
Yeah.
We gained seven governorships, though.
They won a governorship in Kansas?
Scott Walker's gone. Couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, they were delicious governorships.
Yes.
Flips.
Ones where you were screw off, asshole. That was... I felt like... I've been feeling like this has really been a great labor year. And that Scott Walker loss was like this sort of icing on the cake. And labor, you're specifically meaning that labor has been active. Not that they've been getting tons of wins everywhere, but labor has been like, no, you can't just legislate away labor. Right. Labor is still labor, and we can still organize even if you don't let us organize. Like, that's not, you don't win just because you decided that unions aren't a thing.
Well, and I feel like I read a statistic where Scott Walker's race was close-ish, but he had, as governor, had eliminated a law that would have allowed for some sort of recount for him.
He signed the bill that would have
Which is the perfect fuck you to that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If anyone ever deserved the perfect fuck you.
Right. There's also been a lot of talk of all of these, like, Obama-Trump places. Places that voted for Obama twice and then Trump. A third of those districts came back and voted blue. Let's getting more of those back.
Please.
Like, you know, there had also been a lot of discussion about whether some of these places sort of, like, have moved red in any sort of, I mean, nothing's permanent, but like sort of like near permanent future. And obviously that statistic says no.
Yeah.
But also on top of that, like if you look at, you know, Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin won re-election and Scott Walker lost. Michigan, Gretchen Whitmer won the governor's race and won the Senate race, Debbie Stabenow.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania re-elected Bob Casey. Democrats left, right, and center elected in House races there. So, like, that is a good sign.
Meaningful
states
moved back to the
left. A lot of people were sort of, like, panicked because, like, in the places that Trump spent a lot of time, like, they won those Senate seats, and they're like, oh, he still has political clout. That's bad for 2020. But it's like, he only went to, like, the deepest of the
red only
places.
Liked being in places that everyone already
loved. He only went to Florida, Indiana, Missouri, and Montana. And also, half of those might not even flip because John Tester won in Montana.
Yeah.
And we don't know what happened in Florida. So, like, he had his ass handed to him.
Yeah,
he may not be able to take that away from this, but that's what happened.
He's not going to competitive anything anywhere. He's the Harlem Globetrotters. He's only going to play the Washington Generals.
Yeah.
Right.
He's only going to dunk on people he knows can't, like, will wheel a trampoline in front of the basketball.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, and well, and that's I feel like that has been the one of the frustrations people have had about Trump voters is that he's still able to turn out these crowds. He's still able to, like, go to these places where we're sort of like, he's so obviously ridiculous. Like, how can you not know? But these kinds of trends are, like, really meaningful on an electoral level. Like, when 14-point swings are the norm in districts where he still has rabid fans, it doesn't, you know, like, 25% of the electorate is actual crazy people. Like, just they're nonsense people, and you can't do anything about it. Another 20% of the electorate is kind of ridiculous people, too, who are just medium less ridiculous and can sometimes be swayed. Like, a majority of the electorate...
You're almost a 47% like Mitt Romney's head.
Exactly. A majority of the electorate, though, is non-nonsense people who are just who are gerrymandered out of their rightful vote. Because 10 million more people voted for Democrats than Republicans in the Senate
race. Yeah, something like 7 or 8%.
Yeah, something like 6 million more people voted in House races for Democrats than Republicans. I mean, even if you are a person that is worried about the way that the country is still willing to vote for idiots... and racists, there are still millions and millions more voters who vote Democratic than don't. It's just that we have not seemed to figure out a system by which they are able to have their vote adequately be representative.
Yes.
And while that's problematic, it's at least comforting to know that a majority of Americans aren't, like, actual, like, trash people.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
put that on a bumper sticker, America.
Right.
Bye, Uncle Sam.
Also,
you've been replaced.
The other thing that because I often also hear people complain like, oh, but it's because we live in a bubble and we live in a city and blah, blah, blah. And we say this all the time on this podcast, but most people live in cities. Most Americans live in cities by a huge margin.
Yes.
So don't, as a concern about the character of America, don't discount city people just because you were raised in the 90s when everyone was sort of like, you know, was idealizing the sort of gentleman farmer as some sort of real American while people in New York City were busy being immigrants. Like, for years we've had this sort of mythology that city people aren't real Americans because they don't adequately understand the land. And the legacy. And, like, as someone who grew up in a city, that was very damaging to me in the 90s. You know, when I was growing up, that was something where even kids would sometimes say that to me. Like, if I went to camp or when I went whatever, like... They would sort of, like, describe themselves as real Americans, and me is like, but you don't get it. You live in a city. And I'd be like, as does almost everyone in America.
We're not a country of like landmass representation. No, that's risk. That's not American democracy.
Exactly. Like, so
I don't want to play that.
We just need to figure out how we can make the system reflect us better. But we are there. Most of us are not complete assholes. Some of us are accidental assholes in our spare time. I certainly lecture people who don't want to hear it about a lot of topics in my spare time, but not, you know, not to be an asshole.
Right.
In any case, we also knew crazy news would follow Election Day because with any blue wave, we knew Donald Trump would have something to say about it that something would be unpredictable and crazy. And it sure was.
He had an amazing press conference the very next
morning. Oh, my God. It was... Ooh. Not what you want to see after you had watched 9 hours worth of election results into the night.
I know. You really wanted a morning off.
I wanted just a day to be like, hey, let's sleep in.
You know? it almost seems like, I don't know what happened on Fox News on election night, but it sounds like you should have watched MSNBC, where everything was tepid and measured. And
right,
like,
I know.
This isn't a big deal. Nothing really big happened.
Yeah.
But it turns out something awoke in him.
That's right. And people were shocked because on election day, he didn't tweet much. And so everyone was sort of like, is he alive? What's happening?
Right.
What does he have to say about all of this? But then the next day, after his crazy press conference, he banned Jim Acosta from the White House press room from CNN, and then also had a number of memorable and crazy rants that he went on in the process.
Yeah. Well, and they also like released like doctored footage of like Jim Acosta doing something to this like woman who tried to take
what he was doing was casually accidentally brushing against her arm as he attempted to,
as she tried to steal,
she tried to steal his microphone from him.
The like Hope Hicks intern bot. It wasn't actually Hope Hicks, but it was that genre of girl reached over for his mic and he politely like put his hand up and said no, and then InfoWars, I think, sped it up to make it look like he karate chopped her arm. And then, of course, Sarah Sanders retweeted it and says, we don't feel safe in the press briefing room now. It's like, I don't feel safe in America now. Right. So I don't know why
you get
to throw people out and I don't.
Yeah.
But then Jeff Sessions resigned.
Yes. Oh, man.
Yeah. We knew that this was coming at some point.
Oh.
And I can't think of a better day for them to have done it than the day after Election Day, from their perspective. I mean, from my perspective, almost any day would have been a better day. Doing it on Election Day would have even been better. But from their perspective, I can see why it was an exciting, splashy news story to distract us all from the outrageous Democratic win the day before.
Yeah, it was like Trump was like, we're steering towards bad press about an election. Let's swerve into a constitutional crisis.
He's a man who loves, he likes good press. Or not good press. He just likes the eyeballs, you know?
Yes.
He needed the eyeballs.
Well, press is good press.
He likes good ratings. And he got them because he caused a crisis, as you said,
crisis,
by trying to appoint someone that he's not legally entitled to appoint to the job.
My favorite reaction to all of it was that Maggie Haberman retweeted Jeff Sessions' resignation letter, and her only comment was, this letter has no date on it.
Like it's been sitting
in the desk waiting until like he just woke up to a phone call like today. Yep. Okay.
I'll
be in at 9.
That's right. So they're trying to appoint Matthew Whitaker to
as the interim.
In the sense that he has, in the sense of the Constitution allowing for it, because Matthew Whitaker does not have Senate approval. He is not legally the Attorney General, even though he is the Attorney General currently.
I love that also Trump, I think, at some point, or maybe it was Sarah Sanders, I don't remember, like, used as the excuse that he had been approved by the Senate to, like, be, like, the Iowa Attorney General or not.
Right.
Something like that, like, in 2004, like, they had given, like, some sort of just, like tacit approval that they give to, like, anybody who the president sends to them to approve at that point.
Well, the best part of all of this was that this constitutional crisis was actually pointed out to us by George Conway, Kellyanne Conway's husband, who authored a letter with the former Solicitor General, or an op-ed with the former Solicitor General, pointing out that the Constitution actually doesn't allow you to just appoint any old idiot to be the head of the Justice Department.
I heard an interview
Department.
The other day with Alberto Gonzalez, who was just like, no.
Yeah. That's the answer. The answer is no.
Yeah.
And you guys have a little secret shame in all of this because he's a former Iowa football player.
There's no secret because every news outlet that brings up his name mentions he was a tight end for the Iowa Hawkeyes in the 1992 Rose Bowl, and I can't escape it.
I know.
And now this news outlet has done it too. Sorry, everybody.
I want to point out that I have not seen that anywhere, but both of you have mentioned it to me.
Once you look for it, you can't avoid it.
Yeah.
Trump went and found like the biggest like football player like dude that he's like, this guy's in charge.
This one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He also looked for the one who said that the president, like, couldn't be subpoenaed or whatever. Right. Like,
why is that? I don't know why, but, like, that seems to be his job criteria for literally anybody in that program. Yeah. And that was the same way. Too.
Yeah.
He's just well, that's what you do when you're a dictator, is you try to stack the government with people that think you can be a dictator. Cover, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That makes sense. We also had a shooting in California.
Oh God.
I'm concerned.
Was that
by
that night? That was Wednesday, right?
That was
it was right before the fires. Because the fires broke out the next day.
Like Wednesday night, Thursday morning. Yeah.
Thousand Oaks is going through it.
Oh yeah, because they're one of the big fires.
Also,
there too. Yeah.
One of the Maori sisters lost a niece in it. And that's most of the news that I've seen reported about that shooting.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Tamara Maori's niece, by marriage, but her niece,
was one of the victims of that shooting.
I have not seen that. The Ian David Long was the shooter. You can guess his general make and model.
Right.
Just from knowing.
Mid-20s white guy.
Right, just from knowing stuff. Killed 12 people at a country music bar. And so some of them had been in the Vegas shooting, too.
Yes. Two people, I think.
We are now in a place where people can have accidentally been at two mass shootings. And that didn't even seem shocking to me when I heard that. I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. They were at a country music bar. That's not what you want to hear. Also not what you want to hear in a state with some of the strictest gun laws in the country.
Yeah.
That just goes to show you that there is no real state solution to this problem. And that is why there needs to be a federal solution. I am excited to see how this new Congress takes on this issue, because there are some people coming into Congress who have literally no shits to give about working with opposition and doing all of the usual hand-holding that Democrats do, because there are all these people that primaried Democrats and coming in hot.
Yeah.
Like the Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Pressley sort of like genre.
If she can find an apartment.
Right, if she can make it to D.C. and has somewhere to live. But they have no reason to kind of like play to the middle the way that a lot of Democrats do when they come from districts that, you know, aren't safe seats. And also they aren't getting, because they were challengers to sort of big corporate Democrats, they don't have the same sort of like money obligations that those Democrats did. I feel like they should go in hot and just see what happens.
Well,
I've been waiting for Anthony Weiner to come back into my life in some form for years, because that is what New Yorkers loved about him.
Yeah.
Is he came in hot to almost everything, including internet sex. But, you know,
hottest to that, unfortunately.
Exactly. But I mean, the reason New Yorkers were willing to forgive him for that and almost elected him the mayor before he shot himself in the foot again is because he was that guy.
Yeah.
And we could have that guy in the form of hopefully a less problematic female in Congress in the form of many people at this point.
Yes. Well, and I think it would be great to make these Republicans defend this shit now, because it's just like it's nonstop almost.
Yeah.
And for them to have to go in front of cameras, in front of the House and defend all this shit, I think is going to be really problematic. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I think, that now that they have control in the House, they can write a gun bill.
Yes.
And it can be, and what it needs to have in it be, and this is what I have always said, just because the Republicans' favorite, you know, line is that we don't have a gun problem, we have a mental health problem. And
then they vote against mental health funding.
Then let's do mental health.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's like they should write something that they are going to have to defend and that they can't defend because there will be no way to defend.
Yeah. Right. And that addresses the people kill people problem,
right,
which is, sure, guns alone don't kill people, but almost all gun control legislation also focuses on keeping them out of the hands of people who do kill people.
Yeah. Well, and actually, and because California actually has, it'll be interesting to see what we do here statewide too, if we tighten up that, because we have a red flag law here. And he had been taken in for, I think, some sort of like mental health something. And I think that they deemed that he was not a danger to himself and others, but he has some mental health problems. Had he been deemed a danger to himself and others, we could have taken his firearm away in the state of California.
Yeah.
Because it had been legally purchased.
Yeah. Yeah. No, as they always are.
Yeah.
They're always legally purchased, by the way, you guys. All of these guns that commit these mass shootings are.
By someone.
Right. Yeah. That someone has, and that's the thing about guns, is once they've been legally purchased, you can't assume that only the purchaser has access to them.
Right. Right.
He also posted on Instagram, though, during the shooting, which is I don't know. That's not relevant, but it's just gross.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the very next day, California caught fire, and that includes specifically a fire in Thousand Oaks where the shooting took place.
Yes.
So no one had any time to grieve because we've all been dying of smoke inhalation for days now.
Well, people have been losing their houses too.
Right. And people have been losing their houses. Right.
And
the most important.
And their lives.
And their lives. Yeah, because
a lot of people have died.
I mean, there's also fires in Northern California, so California in general is
sort of
like.
That's the biggest one, the Paradise Fire.
Yeah, that Paradise Fire is the biggest one. But
in total, between the fires in Northern and Southern California, 400 square miles are on fire.
And this is not. I was talking to someone who has worked with the Forest Service for years earlier today, and she was like, this is not normal. I mean, we all know it's not normal, but she was like, this is. A very, like, the fact that so many homes are burning, like, we didn't used to have this problem of this many homes being lost in these fires. Like, we've always had a fire problem in this area. Yeah, it's a desert, so that makes sense. But we didn't used to have this kind of, this problematic loss of life and home because we used to be able to more easily contain them. We used to be able to create fire barriers more easily. And something about, like, this is also a global warming thing. This is just sort of, like, something about the change in weather, the change in environment, the fact that it's been getting really hot in the summer, and it's been raining enough in the winter that we have enough brush to have the whole state catch on fire. Like, these are things that are changing. This is different than it used to be. It's much worse than it used to be.
Yeah. Well, and it's worse in part because it never stops either.
Right.
This is not fire season.
No, exactly. No. This is a bad time for fires to start because the Santa Ana winds make fighting fires very difficult.
And
also breathing during fires very difficult because the other problem we've had here is that the entire city of LA has been blanketed in a huge cloud of smoke all weekend.
It was crazy outside. It was yesterday.
Yesterday.
Here, and they're not
the
that
sun
near us.
At 3 p.m. was red. Like, it was, they're not that close, but all the smoke that had blown out to sea blew back into the city and got caught on the mountains, as it always does. And so the entire city of LA has been under, like, bad air warning, basically, for days now, which is another, it creates a sort of second, much less sort of, like, sudden layer of the crisis because it really taxes our health services. And also, this is why you need socialized healthcare. Not everyone can get care that needs care when there's an environmental hazard that has nothing to do with anyone that we should, you know, be able to provide care to people for, like, that we don't have a system that allows for that. So
Trump's got it figured out, though.
Yeah, we can just cut funding to everything because we're doing such a bad job here.
God. It's all our fault.
All our fault.
It's California's fault, you guys.
Yeah, we're mismanaging the forest.
That's
what's causing this.
The forest, that being nature.
I'll just read the tweet just because.
Yeah, I think you should.
Why not?
Let's do it.
So in response to the fires, Trump says, quote, there is no reason for these massive, deadly, and costly forest fires in California, except that forest management is so poor.
No.
Billions of dollars are given each year with so many lives lost, all because of gross mismanagement of the forest. Remedy now or no more Fed payments.
Well, he'd just like to cut the whole forest down. The thing is, it's not forests that are burning.
No.
It's like brush.
And also, somebody subtweeted him from the Forest Service and said something to the effect of, like, 2% of California's forests are run by the state.
Yes, the rest of them,
like,
are.
They're all
it's all federal.
It's federal land. So it's like, if anyone is mismanaging them, it's you.
It's your people.
Right.
Yeah.
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 Which.
And we all know that he's cut funding to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
All of those things.
Well, I like that he also
opened a casino in the middle of Yosemite if they'd let him. Like,
the idea of the idea that anytime you have natural disasters that are out of control, the idea that cutting funding is a good solution to that problem is inherently problematic because if the management is poor, it's not going to get better because less people are doing it.
Right.
There is no logical, you know, there's no logical end to that. Californians are pissed about this comment, by the way, though. I've never seen so many comments on Facebook about any Trump tweet.
You know, and as bad as he was at hurricanes, I thought maybe he'd be better at fires. Turns out he sucks.
No, because remember, we had a huge fire during the Houston hurricanes, and he said something insulting about it while also insulting Houston in he's already insulted our firefighting abilities here, but in the midst of a second crisis.
Oh wow.
Yeah. Okay.
So he really
degree of difficulty
header.
Is super high.
Exactly. In any case, the other thing that was happening this week, because now we're out of midterm season, is everyone's decided they're running for president.
Yeah.
We're talking about how they could be running for president.
Exploratory committees.
There is one person who is actually running for president.
Yeah,
well, two people now. And only Iowans know who he is.
If them.
Who, John Delaney?
John Delaney.
Yeah, I don't think. He's been there a lot, but I can't imagine that he's, like, drawing giant crowds.
No, he's not. They were saying that, like, most of the events had less than 20 people. He was at the state fair last year.
Sure.
And, like, dragged John Boehner into a conversation, because I don't know why John Boehner was there, but
Why wouldn't he be
Delaney
there?
Was he on so stage with? And called him out, and Boehner later was quoted in the article saying, like, I should have just kept walking. which is true. That's that amazing. Article was hilarious, though, because it felt like a straightforward sort of, like, news, like, no editorializing in the article, but the photos were, like, there was one photo with actual people in it, and it looked like they'd run a Dorothea Lange filter over it, and it was, like, these Dust Bowl people looking on. And then the other photos were just, like, an empty field in northwest Iowa, and then there was, like, a...
Oh, his tour bus was one of them.
Yeah, and his tour bus was on there, too. But there were, like, and there was one where he was standing in the middle of a town square, but there were no people. It was abandoned. It looked like John Delaney is running for president in an episode of Black Mirror. And maybe that's where he belongs. I don't know.
Oh, boy. But,
yeah, the other person no one knows who's now running for president is Eric Swalwell, who's a California congressperson that no one's
yes,
heard of.
But what I have discovered in my quick Google search of Eric Swalwell when you told me that he was running for president the other day, California resident, Iowa native.
Come
that's
on.
Right. He is. Yes, I saw that too.
These people and their Iowa-ness is just infuriating.
We're taking over, guys.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you've been taking over. You've had the biggest say in who gets to be the president for years. You've already taken over. It's too late. We've been letting ourselves
be. We tried to warn you guys.
Trump
got third at the Iowa caucuses in 2016.
True.
We tried.
Ted Cruz got
first. I was
going to
say, we tried to give America Ted Cruz, but you wouldn't take it. So,
Kirsten Gillibrand basically declared on a talk show.
Yeah, so it was on Colbert.
On Colbert. And then the Times had an article on 2020 hopefuls. That quoted some of the least qualified people to comment on such matters.
God, no.
Like, do I care who Claire McCaskill thinks should be the president? No. Absolutely not. Yeah. And she's all worried that we're going to take away from the fact that all of these moderate Democrats lost their Senate seats, that we shouldn't run a completely boring moderate Democrat.
I
was like, do take that away.
Oh, yeah. This was one of the things that James Carville was talking about, actually, too, because they were, while they were killing time, they were talking about 2020. And he was going back to the sort of, like, we have to nominate the person who is going to be, like, the most likely to win. But, like, saying it in the way of just sort of, like, we have to nominate John Kerry over again, basically.
Oh.
Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Claire McCaskill is obsessed in a similar way with sort of, like, picking the most qualified person.
Right.
And, like, you know, most boring person and person who can both appeal to the most amount of people all while appealing to no one.
Right.
And it's like,
it doesn't
those
work.
People don't win. They never have. The only person who has been elected since I have been able to vote in 2000 is a person who really ultimately had no business being president as a Democrat anyway.
Yeah.
He was a good president.
Right.
It was Obama. But like Al Gore should have probably been the president and maybe actually won, but regardless.
But he didn't fight for it. The same thing with Hillary Clinton. Democrats.
But John,
they're so respectful of the process and experience that they don't even fucking fight for it when they do win.
It's like Al Gore lost. John Kerry, another person who was like, you know, the overly qualified, most boring person that they could find.
Mm-hmm.
He lost.
Sure.
Hillary Clinton lost. Like the only Democrat who has won an election is a two-term senator who, like, had given a good speech once.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I mean, like...
This idea that you have to reverse engineer a candidate and make people vote for them is...
They're
crazy.
Always terrible.
Why do we
those
have,
candidates
why do we have
are,
primaries
right.
if, that, if
those
not
those candidates are always
like,
garbage.
Yeah. Well, and also, there's sort of, like, this idea that the flashier aspects of the presidential persona are, like, secondary.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you that they're the only thing that matters. You don't actually need ideas to be the president. You need to be good at speeches. You need to be good at stumping. You need to be charismatic. And you need to be good on television.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it would be great if we could find someone who has those qualities and isn't a complete idiot.
Right.
Like, sure, I don't want a complete idiot to be the president. But when you are thinking about the strategy of getting a Democrat elected to be the president, you cannot be sitting there thinking, well, he knows a lot about the policy. Because, frankly, that's not what gets you elected. You need to first think, can he give a good speech on television? And then think to yourself, also, does he know what the speech is about?
I know. And I wish we didn't live in that world.
But we do.
You know, people are talking about Jeff Merkley as a person who might run for president. I love Jeff Merkley. Jeff Merkley
is not
going to
be the president.
Be the don't nominate Jeff Merkley, guys.
He's not
going
to be the president.
I love
not
him.
To run against a member of the WWE Hall of Fame. He's not.
Yes.
He doesn't stand a chance. I'm sorry.
That is not what makes you the president. It is what maybe makes you a good president once you are the president. But it is not.
Right.
But you can't be the president without winning the presidency. And that's really where we are.
Exactly.
You know, Bill Clinton was a guy who could give a speech. That's what made him the president.
Right.
He was not, he wasn't getting elected because he had been such a spectacular governor of Arkansas. No one even fucking knows where Arkansas
is. And he could play the saxophone. Somebody with the talent
Would be great. He smoked pop and he didn't inhale. Martin
O'Malley, was guitar playing. I could get on board with that.
Beto O'Rourke was a bassist, guys. I don't know if anybody remembers.
No, I mean, these are people, not Martin O'Malley, but everyone else could give a compelling speech.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Martin O'Malley was skating by on his good looks, but ultimately is as boring as Mike Pence and kind of physically interchangeable with him in a lot of ways. Yeah. And just like a hotter, he's like a hotter Mike Pence in a lot of ways, you know? But I mean, like, that's why he's not the president.
Right.
But Obama, rando, who gives good speeches, beat the most qualified person to ever run, Hillary Clinton. That is what makes you the president. Well, sorry about it.
And it's not as empty as we're making it sound. Like, Obama was able to... Those good speeches inspired a ton of people to get off their asses and get out and vote. Yes. A lot of people that hadn't voted in the past.
Yes.
It does mean something.
But it matters that's a skill that does matter. It's not as superficial as just like, well, he gives a good speech, but does he know anything? Giving a good speech is 50% of the job when you are the president because you're just the head of things.
You are the mouthpiece. Yeah,
you're a mouthpiece for... Yeah, exactly.
We're not electing somebody to sit in a room all day and write
and write policy. Right.
That's not what they do.
That's what their chief of staff can deal with. That's why Hillary... I always said Hillary Clinton would be a great chief of staff. Yeah. Because she actually knows the stuff. And she's great at thinking about it from every side. So many sides that you don't know what side she's on. But I mean, like, she's good at... She can think her way around an issue and she knows everything about everything.
Yeah.
That's a chief of staff thing.
I can hear her tersely smiling from here. at that comment.
But I mean,
thank you, Lila.
The thing is... That doesn't get... You don't get to be the president with that skill, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just not the world. So in any case, Claire McCaskill, I want to read the quote from the article because it's kind of a funny quote. I hope that no one thinks that because some of the red state Democrat moderates lost, that means we have to nominate a progressive. The more sensible answer, Ms. McCaskill said, would be to find Mr. Trump's political and stylistic opposite. Perhaps even, quote, even a boring candidate. She mentioned a handful of little-known senators and governors who exude vanilla.
Vanilla. And my favorite part of that, the Times was basically saying, go fuck yourself, is that they didn't name any of those people that she said.
Right.
They didn't even bother. She suggested a bunch of people that we're not
that
going to print.
Don't think are worth your time.
She probably said John Hickenlooper, and they were like,
okay, I see where this is going. I already have this list somewhere else.
Then they asked Tom Vilsack. Like, I also don't need his advice on who to run for president.
Again, another Iowan. I don't care what he is saying about this.
Yeah.
No.
Well, and also, I mean, when you think about where some of those early states just moved politically, it doesn't make sense to even play to the middle in Iowa at the moment.
No.
You know? I mean...
I mean, it never really has. But well, I mean, like, it never did. That's why we keep losing shit. But, I mean, like...
Little known socialist tied Hillary Clinton in 2016.
And like somehow we're still walking away like Iowans are sensible. We shouldn't scare them with any kind of crazy policy. Like Iowans are a little bit nutty, you guys.
Iowans had gay marriage before
anyone.
Most of the country.
And
it was Obama, John Edwards, and then Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
Right.
They really tried to warn us.
In 2008.
They did.
Really?
Yeah.
They're like, we will elect this crazy person who has a secret baby in Montecito before we'll elect Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. So as we start to panic about 2020, because it's finally time, you know, for years we've had to be like, calm everyone down because we can't elect the candidate before we've had midterms.
Yeah.
And now we're finally past midterms. We can start panicking. It's great.
Great.
Yeah.
But we should keep in mind that 80% of the people who have declared or seem like they're going to declare cannot be the president.
And a lot of people have said that they are going to either announce or make a decision by the end of the year. So there are people who are like, those are just people who like said something this week or last year.
Who accidentally said something on the record and can't take it back.
Exactly. Yeah. Come January,
I think Eric Garcetti said he was going to decide something by the end of the year.
Eric Garcetti is running for president.
He's already running.
It's but half of America has been just like Cory Booker. It's just been like on a trip to Iowa for the last 8 months, it feels like. Like everyone is just in Iowa constantly.
Yeah.
When did you go hang out in Iowa next year?
Honestly, go to the state fair.
Yeah, we're going.
We're going to the state fair.
Fantastic.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's been planned for over a year.
Good. That's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're
not going to have enough time for everybody to stand on the hay bale and give their speech.
No, they are
not.
They're going to be just doing it all at the same time, and you're just going to have to deal with the cacophony of, speeches.
That's
no, thanks.
Thing, by the way. I didn't that up as a...
believe it's a thing, and I'm excited to see it with my own eyes while eating some sort of fried butter
concoction. Yeah, you just go and stand up, and they're like, right there.
I was thinking maybe I could run for president while we're there. Just stand, if you can just stand on a hay bale, just do whatever. Right. I have a lot of thoughts make to share. Yeah.
Yeah.
As I've been threatening now, jokingly, but for a while now, to run against Adam Schiff on a solely Medicare for All platform.
Please.
Because he's not in favor of Medicare for All. I don't... What good that is seem, he to like, the district if he's not going to be in favor of things for people in the district?
I will tell you, that seems like something that will change with a Democratic House. I think he's going to have to get in line
with
that.
If it doesn't, I am going to have to run for Congress, which, again, I don't really want to do.
I want you to. I do too.
I just need to know that... I need him to know. I know everything. I don't need him to know that that's not an acceptable position stake out while he's repping fucking West Hollywood and Silver Lake.
Right. Yeah. No, you need a Cynthia Nixon his ass. Yes. If he's not going to get on board.
I believe very strongly in random primary runs from any old person who has a thorn in their side about something. You know, like and speaking of, we've been hearing some talk about Newsom sort of like trying to walk back his avid Medicare for All support. I'm just here to warn him that we're not going to take that line down.
I think what he's trying to
do right now is sort of tamp down expectations, because as we know, it's still pretty contentious in the state legislature.
Yeah,
we tried to do it. I don't think it will easily pass. But my message to him is just like fucking figure it out.
Right.
As it is to everyone. My message to everyone about Medicare for All is I don't want to hear your whining. Well, yeah. Figure it out. That's why we elected you.
I don't want to hear your minimum wage should be $12 and not $15 version of this. Just like go for $15. And if you get 12, you get 12.
Exactly. Yeah. Go big. Say the thing. In any case. But yeah, that's been all the panic. I'm on a lot of Medicare for All related listservs and Facebook groups, as you might imagine.
Yeah, I was going to say. Feels on brand.
Yeah, that's where I got this information.
Sure.
So, in any case, but that's the news this week. We'll be back to report what races we know of next week when we find out about all the rest of them, because we certainly...
Maybe some indictments. I was hoping for some of those later this week.
Because the other thing that we are all panicked about is what's going to happen with the Mueller investigation.
Well, he's
now
supposedly writing his report.
Right. He's almost done.
Okay.
He knew that this could happen. Like, he's been prepared for the moment that he was going to be told that it was all coming to
a
crashing end.
Well, and he was just doing the thing that he was supposed to do and not interfering in an election.
Correct. Right.
So that's why everybody was sort of like, all right, the election's over.
Right.
Like,
tomorrow, let's get to it.
He went like silent for 60 days and everyone's like, where did he go?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, He's doing his job.
Yeah. He also has been very smart about this. Everyone was panicking about that when Sessions resigned, and I was like, I believe Mueller knows what he's doing, guys. I trust him to know how to deal with this. Yeah. It's not great if the investigation ends and he, you know, but I know he knows how to get this information to the people.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he's a guy who knows. So in any case.
And he can get it to the Democrats who run the House now.
Exactly.
So that is another good reason.
Without somebody running to the White House and jumping the fence to warn the president in the middle of the night.
Jerry Nadler is now going to be the head of the Judiciary Committee.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very excited about that. I remember his glory days on the Judiciary Committee with Maxine Waters during the Clinton impeachment hearings, and I look forward to more excitement. I mean, he was in the minority then, but he was up to shenanigans, which is what you want from any New Yorker. And Maxine Waters is going to be the head of the Finance Committee. I mean, there's some exciting things about to happen in the House. And I hope that the House, because they know they can't get anything through the Senate, just does the Democratic equivalent of repealing Obamacare 60 times.
Oh, well, that's what I think, too, because they were talking about like what, you know, they were asking the president like whether he could work with the Democrats and what sort of like legislation they could get done. And everybody keeps talking about infrastructure and like do an infrastructure bill. Like I'm for that. But like also just send the Senate 100 bills that they have to vote no on.
Yeah.
A crazy number. Make them go on the record about every single one.
Okay. Right. And once you can, if you've got a potentially 40 seat advantage in the House,
just go big.
Be a bill factory. Yep.
And that's, I want them to change leadership, because that's the thing I don't think the current leadership will do that newer leadership could do.
Right.
Because I know Nancy Pelosi can whip a vote. I'm not here to tell you that I don't trust her votes.
But is she willing to whip the vote like on a progressive gun bill?
Exactly.
Like, right.
And I want there to be someone. By the way, I'm trying to spread this because this will be my final thought of the podcast.
Okay.
Barbara Lee should be the Speaker of the House. That's who I'm starting to spread.
Hasn't she made her own rumblings about that before?
There have been rumblings about it in the past. She is a perfect person to be the Speaker of the House right now, because she, first of all, she's much more progressive, obviously, than Nancy Pelosi, but she's sort of like medium senior, so she's not so old that she's completely out of touch with reality,
right.
But she is old enough that people respect her there. Yes. She's a woman of color, and this is, yep. you know, this is sort of like the moment of women of color coming into Congress, and I feel like they should be given leadership, you know, they should be given the opportunity to sort of like take that mantle, which has been really successful for us, you know, electorally, yeah. and run with that on a policy end, because that, I think, is a sort of powerful message for us to send. And also, she's in favor of Medicare for All, and she's fucking great. So she can, you know, be the people's, you know, speaker.
Speaker, yeah. I'll counter that with Nancy Pelosi's quote this week, which was that she said, "I love the fray, and that's a problem for people who come after me, because I love it there." She wants to fight.
I don't know.
Like, but she wants to fight with both sides. She doesn't want to just fight.
That's
like,
true.
Like I said, she can whip a vote. I'm not here to tell. And she can still help whip votes if yes. she's not the speaker.
Correct.
She should, yeah. in fact, still yeah. help whip votes if she's, because she's the most effective whip in probably all of the Congress.
Yes.
That's why she's held that position for so long.
Right.
But she just shouldn't be setting the agenda anymore. It's too late for her to be setting the agenda. Her agenda is wrong.
Yeah.
Her vote whipping, still top notch.
Still fantastic. Right?
Uh-huh. I've honestly never met anyone who seemed more terrifying in person than her.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
She's like the most powerful like person presence I've ever experienced. It was like kind of terrifying, but also amazing to be in a room with her. Yeah, it was very exhilarating.
Like, I could get killed right now.
Exactly. Yeah, it felt like she could somehow kill me without moving and also without acknowledging it happened. Like, right.
Blameless. She just, and it right. was not a factor.
She could blink and, right like, on. I would do whatever she needed. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so in any case, that's where I am on the House leadership
right.
situation okay. at the moment. And I'm asking everyone to spread a rumor that it's happening.
We can just incept everybody.
If we can incept everyone.
They'll assume it's happened before the vote.
That will make it easy. It's like how I'm trying to incept that we should run two women for the president and the VP slot should go to Tammy Duckworth. Even though I, again, hate Tammy Duckworth. I think she's politically, like, the worst.
Okay.
Think she would be a great VP candidate.
Yeah, she's a badass.
She's a badass. She's an awesome speaker.
Yeah, she doesn't mind saying the
She will say the thing. And often her thing is not my thing, which is why politically, like, I find her problematic.
Right.
But as a VP candidate, that's a powerful tool.
Right, because you don't need to agree with them on anything.
No, and she can be a person who raises those issues within the administration so that they feel like the middle is being represented and it's part of the discussion. Like, I don't have a problem with that as long as the candidate itself is someone who's progressive.
Right.
But she's someone who I feel like, in tandem with another female candidate, like, what a win. So I'm trying to spread that rumor, too. I'm just mostly sharing rumors I'm trying to spread. to close this out, if anyone else has thoughts,
I mean, that's
now would be the time. Well,
that's what this podcast is.
Yeah, right. It's rumor mongering. Theory and rumor mongering.
Yeah.
In any case, but that's the news this week. We'll be back with more election results and other fallout from the election, which will most likely involve Donald Trump losing his mind further.
We didn't even talk about him in Paris.
No, I know. But we will.
We will.
We'll get to it. But that's the news this week. Thanks so much
for
coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Bye.